Welcome to Inspiration and Transformation from the Banks of the Ganga with Sadhvi Bhagwati Saraswati, an American sannyasi living at the Parmarth Nikatan Ashram in Rishikesh, India. Sadhvi is president of the Divine Shakti Foundation, a charitable organization bringing education, vocational training, upliftment, and empowerment programs to women and children. Sadhvi is also Secretary General of the Global Interfaith WASH Alliance and Director of the world-famous International Yoga Festival. Join the musings of an American sannyasi as Sadhvi shares the wisdom and teachings of her guru, His Holiness Pujya Swami Chidanand Saraswatiji.
Welcome, everyone, to Inspiration and Transformation from the Holy Banks of the sacred Ganga River in the land of Rishikesh, India. Join us here on the holy banks of Mother Ganga, in the lap of the towering and beautiful Himalayas, for our annual International Yoga Festival, taking place from March 1st to March 7th every year. Come join your global yoga family in a true union of yourself with your divine self. We look forward to welcoming you all. You can go to the website on www.internationalyogafestival.org. Look forward to welcoming you all home to the banks of Mother Ganga. How to manage the suffering in the world? Well, fortunately, it's not actually our job to do that, which is really important. And I don't say that in a blasé sort of way. I say that in a real way. Until and unless someone has come down and has said to you, okay, you are now in charge, you're not in charge. That doesn't mean that we're not all supposed to do as much as we possibly can in the areas that we can impact and influence. That is our job. As far as my impact, as far as my influence can go, I need to use that. But we're not in charge of the whole world. And it feels like that sometimes. Sometimes you turn on the news, you turn on the internet, you open a paper, and it hits us as though, really, I've got to figure out what to do. How can I get up and move through my world when the world is in this situation? But really the truth is that not only can none of us actually manage the whole world, but the sense of overwhelm that comes from trying to take on the whole world renders you much less able to be impactful or effective in the part that you actually do have the ability to impact. We can't manage the whole world. What we have to manage is ourselves. And actually, ironically, if everyone simply managed themselves, the world wouldn't need our managing. It's lack of people taking responsibility for themselves. It's lack of people managing themselves that requires us to manage the whole world. And I don't mean the people who are in trouble. I don't mean the homeless people. I don't mean the poor people. I mean the people who are making decisions, including, amazingly, us, in, sure, somewhat more subtle ways than government officials may be making decisions. But we also make decisions every day. What we eat, what we buy, what we wear, how we live, that have ripple effects on everything on the planet. that have ripple effects on hunger, ripple effects on thirst, ripple effects on the deforestation of the Amazon, ripple effects on global warming. So if everyone actually managed themselves, there wouldn't be anything to manage. But given where we currently are, I think the key is a couple of fold. Number one, recognizing that you cannot possibly fix everything, but not letting that make you feel dejected or depressed. Rather, simply doing as much as you possibly can. There's a beautiful Hindi poem that Pooja Swamiji recites sometimes, the English translation of which basically is, you know, we can't clear the entire garden of thorns, but at least whatever pathway we're walking, as we walk, we're able to clear that pathway. So it's not, well, either it's got to be everything or it's nothing. Either I'm going to have a magic wand to fix the world, or I'm just going to sit here on my couch and get drunk, or, you know, just read novels or watch TV or check out in some way from the world. It's not an either or situation. Because again, remember, there's a ripple effect. Remember, we're all deeply, deeply, deeply connected. You know, what the sages and the saints and the rishis told us thousands of years ago about our interconnection, quantum physics today is talking about, right? I mean, you have to get into a little bit of the esoteric readings, but you start reading about things like string theory. Okay, now this is now hard science. This is not spirituality. This is not New Age. This is not a yoga institute. This is not, I had a meditation and in my meditation it was revealed that. This is hard science. String theory. There are actually energetic strings in the world. Shake a part of it over there, it's going to shake over there. Just as if you and I held on to opposite ends of a string and I shook mine over here, you'd feel it over there. Pull it here, you're going to feel it there. And this is where, for example, as species that may seem sweet and even beautiful, but globally irrelevant, like certain species of bees or certain species of butterflies, you know what I mean? The species of insects, you think, well, all right, that's sad, but really, what does it matter? The truth is, it matters a lot. It matters a lot in ways that we cannot even imagine. Because that species of bee or butterfly is connected to this end of the string, the other end of which is our survival. And I share this with you because you should never think what I'm doing is not enough. Each of us has been given, and we continue to be given as we grow, as we move through the world, as we dedicate ourselves, as we commit, as we learn, skills and tools and abilities. They're not all the same, either quantitatively or qualitatively, but we each have them. And each of them has a ripple impact on the world. And so rather than holding your head in despair at the unmanageable state of the world, the question is, what strings are connected to me? I may not know what's on the other end of them. I may have no idea where those ripples go. Some of them we do know. And one of the things we talk about very frequently in here is vegetarianism, for example. Well, the end of the string of what I eat is world hunger. The end of the string of what I eat is deforestation of the Amazon. The end of the string of what I eat is global warming. But a lot of things are not quite that obvious. And really, it doesn't matter. All that matters is I'm doing my part on this end of the string. And the other aspect of it is to stay involved. But to stay involved in a way that is peaceful. your upset, your aggression, your frustration, excuse me, your awareness that this is unmanageable doesn't actually help anybody. When you're grounded and you're peaceful, that's when you're able to not only spread peace, which of course is great, but it's actually when you're able to connect with what the universe needs. If anybody's ever tried to think really well when you're stressed out or upset or overwhelmed, this is the time we can't even remember where we put down our keys, let alone figure out what to do about poverty or climate change or women's rights. I mean, I don't know where I left my car in the parking lot. So what kind of an agent of positive change am I possibly going to be able to be in the world when I'm so flustered that I don't even know where I am? And that's the reason that we need to stay grounded and that we need to stay peaceful. Because actually then we can be positive agents. I remember I'd been here, I don't know, less than a year, and Pooja Swamiji took me to see a group of schools that were in a slum area outside of Delhi. And it was horrendous. I mean, I had seen movies, but it's very different to see something in a movie and to see it in real life. And I've always been deeply committed to children. I was doing pediatric neuropsychology. My goal was to help children who were suffering. And we spent the day visiting 10 different schools that were just the most abysmal of the abysmal. They were shacks. I mean, they weren't even schools. They were schools in that there was a teacher and there were kids. But beyond that, there were, you know, some plywood sheets, maybe there was some fabric, maybe there was some tin, maybe there was, you know, someone's old sari. There was never electricity, there were never actual floors or roofs. And we had been called there because the people who were running these 10 schools didn't even have the money to keep them going at the standard they were. They didn't even have the money to give the teachers anymore. And so they had come to Pooja Swamiji to see whether he'd be prepared to adopt these schools and maybe even, by his grace, better them. So he took me and we went to see them. And in the evening, and I held it together all day, just literally sort of digging my fingernails into my hand and biting my tongue and clenching my jaw. And we get back to our Delhi ashram and it's dinner time. And I'm sobbing, I mean, hysterically, like I can't breathe, I'm sobbing. And I say, I can't eat dinner, how can I possibly eat dinner? I mean, these kids, my God, they don't have any dinner, how can I possibly eat dinner? You know, this is so horrible. And Pooja Swamiji looks at me and he says, are your tears helping them? And you have to know him to understand that this is not sarcasm, this is not rudeness, this is just truth. Here it is. Let's call it what it is. Let's look at what it is. Here it is. Are your tears helping them? And I said, no, but oh my God, the kids. And he looked at me and he said, your tears are only helping yourself. He said, your tears make you feel like you're a really compassionate person. Your tears are, you know, make you feel like, you know, here you are crying for these kids and you're so connected to these kids and aren't you so sensitive and, you know, all of these things. He said, but your tears aren't actually helping them. He said, if you really want to help them, eat your dinner, go to sleep, and get up tomorrow morning at 5 o'clock in the morning and start figuring out how you're going to raise enough money to adopt all 10 of these schools. And I love that story because it's just such a clear teaching on where my emotional reaction to the unmanageableness ends, and my stepping into being an agent in whatever way it may be of change begins. And for a lot of us, that which is going on feels so big and so overwhelming and so unmanageable, which is really why if you need to start taking news in doses, small doses, do it. That's not cutting yourself off from the world. It's literally taking in as much as you can digest. There's lots of things that are good for us, lots of things that are important for us, but you take in too many and you end up with a stomach ache. Literally. Take it in doses. And particularly take in that which maybe in some way you can impact. Maybe in some way your string is connected to it. As you move through the world, how can I serve? How can I be a vehicle? How can I be a vessel? In what way can I be used? And just start opening yourself up to that. And it may not be huge things. You may not found an NGO that ends up, you know, winning the, you know, some big humanitarian award someday. But it doesn't matter. As you move through the world, you're going to be given opportunities every hour, every day, to be an agent of change and peace. Okay? And lastly, just remember, of course, that have faith. There is a plan, which means there's a planner. Doesn't mean that it's been planned like this. We've been given free will. We're seeing in many tragic cases the end result of free will gone awry. But nonetheless, there's a planner. And the planner is benevolent and good and divine. And so my faith is that if we can just step back enough, there's a lot that looks like incredible chaos when it's smack up in your face, including some of the world's most beautiful artwork. Stand too close to it, it's chaos. Step back enough, and you're able to see what it means and even sometimes the beauty in it.
You're listening to OTRFM, part of the IOM Radio Network.
Being a radio host on IOM FM allows you to build your show on a rich platform with the power of the internet to fulfill your outreach goals and connect with a very specialized and global online audience, unlimited by time and distance. OM Times Radio will provide you with web relevance, a recognizable conscious brand, and with the standard of excellence that has accompanied every single...
Circle of Hearts Radio is a sanctuary on the airwaves. Join me, Grandmother Alaya, in the circle on Sunday, 2 p.m. Eastern, as I share information to both enlighten and nourish your soul.
Hi, this is Christina Ricci with RAIN. Every 2 minutes, another American is sexually assaulted. If you or someone you know has been sexually assaulted, you are not alone. Help is just a call or click away through the National Sexual Assault Hotline. Please call 1-800-656-HOPE, that's H-O-P-E, or visit rain.org, that's RAINN.ORG.
Brought to you by RAIN and this station.
Welcome back to Inspiration and Transformation. I'm so glad to have you all back here with me. Intention and agenda is very important. I may do good things, but if I'm doing them with the agenda that I'm going to be recognized for them, that I'm going to be appreciated for them, that I'm going to get good things in return, then chances are I am going to be miserable. Because I'm going to be miserable waiting to get my appreciation and acknowledgement and all the good things that are going to come. When they come, chances are they're not going to be as big or enough as I think they should be. But if my agenda of doing good things is for the joy of doing them, and it doesn't mean that the things themselves are so joyful, doesn't mean the actual work is always so joyful, but simply the joy of being in service. I may be sweeping the floor, I may be cleaning toilets, I may be cutting vegetables in the kitchen, I may be designing brochures, I may be stuffing envelopes, I may be going door to door raising money for an organization, but I could be doing any one of a million things. I could be making sandwiches for the poor. I mean, I could be doing literally an infinite number of things. Not all of those things in and of themselves is particularly enjoyable. But if I'm able to take joy in being of service, then that service becomes its own reward. So if I'm looking for what is going to come back for me, you know, Pooja Swamiji always says, we always ask what for me. And really what we need to ask is what through me. So if I'm doing good work, but my question is what for me? What am I going to get out of this? It may be fully volunteer work. But I'm expecting somebody's going to notice, somebody's going to love me for it, whatever it may be. It could be a conscious expectation. Or a very deep-seated unconscious expectation. Then I'll be worthy. Then I'll be enough. Then my existence will matter. I mean, it may be very, very deep and subtle. But as long as we're looking for something from someone else, if this person appreciates me, acknowledges me, then I feel okay, then I feel worthy. When I get it, great. I don't get it, I don't feel great. So the service when you're doing good things has to be its own reward. If you're serving people, the benefit you're giving them, whether they acknowledge you or not, whether they even know you're the one who did it or not, but simply knowing, kids have sweaters today who didn't have sweaters yesterday. Kids have a school today who didn't have a school yesterday. They don't know we did it. We may not have gone personally and handed out every sweater, but just the awareness. The kids who were shivering yesterday or today not shivering. That brings joy. And the flip side of it is, as you say, people who do wrong things seem happy. I would disagree with you. I really would disagree with you. I would say that there is a drama in our world that a lot of people, most people in fact, sort of subscribe to on a surface level. And the drama is that having money, being rich, having big things, being successful, being powerful, that these are the good things in life. And so people who have them typically may act like, yeah, everything's great, because they know we have to act like everything's great. We're the rich people in the community. I'm the head. I'm the boss. If the CEO of a company walks into a boardroom and, you know, puts his or her head in their hands and says, oh my God, I'm so depressed. Do any of you guys know what to do? The company's going to fall apart. People are going to be like, well, you can't be CEO. Like, you need to guide us. You're supposed to know what's going on here. You have to have it together. And so there's a whole drama that we've created based on the myth that these are the things that bring happiness. Which means that if you have them, yeah, you better be happy. My whole illusion of my life and everything I think I'm working for is based on the illusion that when I get those things, I'm going to be happy. You have them, you better look happy. Or my whole life is a question mark. And so should you be rich or beautiful or famous or powerful or whatever it is and dare to not be happy? What you tend to get is, what do you have to be miserable about? Like, you've got everything. And that's not a very compassionately open space for someone to be honest themselves, which is why people tend not to share it. But what I can tell you from traveling around the world and meeting so many people of every walk of life is so frequently, you find yourself in the homes of the richest people in the community, and everybody's there at the home, and there's a gathering, and there's many, many Mercedes lining the driveway, and it's a mansion, and people are there, and they look really happy, decked out in the best clothes. And then people leave, and the doors close, and they fall at Pooja Swamiji's feet sobbing because they're miserable. But they're embarrassed to be miserable because they have everything. So don't make any assumptions, actually, about how deeply happy people are. The other last piece that I would give you about this is, if you were really happy, you wouldn't do wrong things. And the reason that I know this is, I'm a scientist by academic background, and I love science, and I kind of move through the world in my mind, just subtly running many, many experiments simultaneously, and just watching and listening and looking and paying attention and wondering and thinking. And one of the things that I've noticed that I'm pretty sure is true is, when you're happy, you make people around you happy. When you are deeply in peace within yourself, you spread that. You know, Pooja Swamiji, again, he's got a beautiful quote. He always says, when you are in peace, you share peace, and you exude peace, and you manifest peace. And when you're in pieces, you share and manifest and exude pieces. If I'm happy, if I've got an inner experience of my cup flowing over, I don't need to grab from you. I don't need to cheat you. I don't need to betray you. I don't need to step on your head. If, God forbid, there's an inevitable situation in which I think maybe you're going to be hurt, I'm going to do everything I possibly can to soften that blow for you, because I want to share my joy and my peace. That's the nature of joy, is it wants to be shared. This is why when someone smiles at you, you can't help but smile back. They were just smiling. Their joy is, but there's something about a smile that makes us smile. That's the nature of joy. It's actually contagious. So if someone is doing wrong things, if someone is lying, if someone is cheating, if someone is abusing, if someone is betraying, whatever they may be doing, you can be pretty sure that they're doing it from a place of an inner sense of lack, an inner sense of fear, an inner sense of not enoughness, the opposite of my cup runneth over. Because that's what leads to harming others.
This is OTRFM, part of the IOM radio network.
OM Times Magazine is one of the leading online content providers of positivity, wellness, and personal empowerment. A philanthropic organization, their net proceeds are funneled to support worldwide charity initiatives via Humanity Healing International. Through their commitment to creating community and providing conscious content, they aspire to uplift humanity on a global scale. OM Times, co-creating a more conscious lifestyle.
Do you have time to read that inspiring book or that blog post you've been meaning to get to? In your busy world, how do you improve yourself and keep your life going? I'm Lisa Kay, and my Between Heaven and Earth radio show can transform your life just by listening. Be uplifted with inspiring topics, positive stories, and ideas that really work. Between Heaven and Earth Radio is conscious living for your soul. every Wednesday at 4 p.m. Eastern Time.
Mike Baldwin with People for the Ethical Treatment of Animals. I grew up loving circuses and other traveling animal shows, but it never occurred to me what life might be like for the animals. Training wild animals to do things they don't understand takes force. Routine discipline with a hook or whip with the heel of a boot shows the animal exactly who's the boss. Don't patronize animal acts. Please contact People for the Ethical Treatment of Animals.
757-622-PETA.
Welcome back. This is Sadhvi Bhagavati Saraswati with Inspiration and Transformation. So which is it, right? Is there a loving creator with a plan? And if so, how is it that people are getting hit by drunk drivers and losing limbs? Or do we have free will and make choices and bad things happen? And it's both. This is the stuff that many year-long courses are made of spiritual philosophy of karma, spiritual philosophy of reincarnation, spiritual philosophy. I mean, this is literally, people do advanced degrees in these subjects. But in short, and in an overarching way, and particularly in a way that matters most to us, so not necessarily in the most esoterically philosophical way, but in the way that matters in our life. First, yes, there's absolutely a divine creator. For me personally, that the surety of that comes from three places. Number one, because people I really, really, really trust, whom I have grown to trust very, very deeply over my life, have had very personal experiences of knowing, whether it's past lives, whether it's direct connections of visions in this life of karma. So for me, that's one way, is just when you've got people in your life you deeply trust. You know, you can't listen to everybody. You've got a cold or a flu or a cough. If you listen to every single person who told you what to do, you would end up not only with a cold, but you'd end up insane. Seriously, you couldn't possibly take advice from even 10 people for something as simple as congestion and a cough. Then you think about something as big and important as my life. You choose who are the people. If it's an area that we don't know from personal experience, so okay, if I haven't had a personal experience of this loving creator, how do I know? Well, one way of knowing is if you happen to have people in your life whom you deeply trust, who have had personal experience, and say to you, here is what I know. It's the flip side of don't stick your finger in that socket. I've done that. I know what happens. If you trust the person, you're not going to stick your finger in the socket. For me, the second way of knowing is personal spiritual experience. I've had experiences of connecting to, being in the presence of the Creator. And it's an experience of nothing but love. So on a personal experience level, I've had that experience. And the third way that I know is science. Science is usually the greatest argument against a loving creator. But for me, having spent time in physics labs, in biology labs, in chemistry labs, where you know exactly what you're doing. I mean, the instructions are given to you exactly. You've got all of your tools in place. You've got all of the different elements that you're adding in, that you're titrating in. You've got your Bunsen burner. You turn it on. And despite knowing everything, despite thousands and thousands of years of probably unofficial study and at least hundreds of years of very official academic scientific study, we know. We know what things are made of. We know how molecules bind together. But despite knowing all of that, we still can't create life in a lab. The very best that our best top scientists have been able to do, sometimes in some labs a couple of times over the last decade, is clone. The best we can do is create something out, a mirror image, a Xerox copy. We cannot create a leaf or a mosquito. Despite botanists being able to tell you exactly how the leaf is made, exactly how much carbon, exactly how much hydrogen, exactly how much oxygen, how the molecules of carbon are bound together, they know it all. They could do it for you with styrofoam, but they can't actually make it. And so for me, science is actually another one of the greatest ways of knowing that there must be a planner. That doesn't mean the Big Bang didn't happen. It doesn't mean evolution didn't happen. They both happened. It simply means that there was a, and there is, a being, an energy, a wisdom, whatever we want to call it, who knew how the Big Bang was going to work? Who knew how this evolution thing was going to happen? So those for me on, and all three of them are very personal ways. Those for me are the personal ways that I know there's a loving creator. It's not something I can prove to you. It's something that maybe all three or one of those three ways works for you. Or maybe there'll be other ways. In terms of free will, though, we definitely have free will. And this is where the law and the science of karma really gives it to us very, very specifically and very scientifically. There is this divine creator. We've been created whole and complete and perfect and divine. We've been given a body. We've been given a circumstance, a situation in which that body takes birth, out of which womb, in which hospital or which home or which alleyway, in which city, in what type of family, in what type of color, culture, with what type of opportunities. That's what you call our karmic package. But what we do with that is free will. Now, of course, karma plays a role in it. How intelligent I am. The type of sanskaras or ethics or values I'm going to get from my family are going to dictate how I think about things and therefore how I'm going to use my free will. So it's all interlinked and interlocked. It's not black or white. It's here is the divine plan, here's the creator, here's the law of karma, which is science. It's not God sitting up there, you know, saying you've been good, you've been bad, here's your reward, here's your punishment. God has created the law of karma, much like God has created the law of gravity. If you step off a building, you're going to plummet to the ground. Not because the creator isn't good, not because the creator's against you, not because you've been selected against in the love of God, but because along with creation, God has given us laws. One of them is gravity. If you use your free will to step off a building, you will plummet to the ground. The law of gravity is there. If you plant an apple seed, you're going to get an apple tree. Law of karma. Actions and reactions. So in our lives, that which we're experiencing is a beautiful mix of a full karmic package from God knows how many lifetimes, from divine plan, divine creation, and how our free will interact with all of that. So right here, right now, we're all sitting here. We can't change that. You can't rewind your life and be drinking a cappuccino on the Champs-Élysées at this moment instead. I used to watch a show when I was young called Bewitched, and her daughter would, you know, do this with her nose, and she would. She'd be suddenly drinking a cappuccino on the Champs-Élysées or wherever she'd go, but we don't have that. We're here right now. It's the sum total of the divine creator's plan. You're here for a reason. It's not random. It's also the interaction of your karmic package. Clearly, somewhere along the line, you got an inclination towards spirituality, which is why you're here rather than drinking in a bar somewhere. Lots of people are drinking in lots of bars across the world right now. You're not. You're here. Somewhere along the line, you got that spiritual inclination. But you also did actions. You got yourself to India, for many of you. You got yourself to Rishikesh. If you were with us in Arati, you walked up the steps from Arati and came in. If you weren't in Arati, you found your way in. You've sat down. You've done the actions. The sum total of all of that is why you're here. And yeah, there's a reason. But now you have free will. And what you do with the fact that you are here is up to you. You could walk out of here and walk into a bar. Not very close by. Rishikesh is a dry city, but you know, you'd have to go a little ways. But you know, you'd find one somewhere. You could go back to Delhi, you could book yourself a ticket, get on a plane, go to Paris, and you know, in 10, 12, 15 hours be drinking a cappuccino. Or you could walk out of here and go sit on the banks of Ganga and meditate on what we're talking about. You could sit over dinner and talk about it with your loved ones. You could allow it to percolate in. You could decide to extend your stay in Rishikesh. Maybe you were supposed to, you know, sightsee in a lot of places, but you've decided that being on the banks of Ganga is transforming you. That's your free will. But where you're going to be tomorrow and next week and next year is based on how you use your free will today. So that's not predetermined. Where you are right now, predetermined by that's which happened prior to this moment. Where you're going to be next week is being determined every minute and every moment by what you do right now. And that's where all of that intersects and interacts.
This is OTRFM, part of the IOM radio network.
OM Times Magazine is one of the leading online content providers of positivity, wellness, and personal empowerment. A philanthropic organization, their net proceeds are funneled to support worldwide charity initiatives via Humanity Healing International. Through their commitment to creating community and providing conscious content, they aspire to uplift humanity on a global scale. OM Times, co-creating a more conscious lifestyle.
Do you have time to read that inspiring book or that blog post you've been meaning to get to? In your busy world, how do you improve yourself and keep your life going? I'm Lisa Kay, and my Between Heaven and Earth radio show can transform your life just by listening. Be uplifted with inspiring topics, positive stories, and ideas that really work. Between Heaven and Earth Radio is conscious living for your soul every Wednesday at 4 p.m. Eastern Time.
Like Baldwin with People for the Ethical Treatment of Animals. I grew up loving circuses and other traveling animal shows, but it never occurred to me what life might be like for the animals. Training wild animals to do things they don't understand takes force. Routine discipline with a hook or whip or the heel of a boot shows the animal exactly who's the boss. Don't patronize animal acts. Please contact People for the Ethical Treatment of Animals.
757-622-PETA.
Welcome back. This is Sadhvi Bhagavati Saraswati with Inspiration and Transformation. Relationships. How do you stay loving and forgiving regardless of what happens? Well, the first aspect is to remember that what we love is the person, not the action. The one we forgive is the person, not the action. What ends up happening when you say, you know, we see the good and the bad, it's good and bad actions, it's good and bad tendencies, it's good and bad characteristics, it's good and bad aspects of ego development. Being loving and forgiving does not mean, oh my God, that's so beautiful when you slap me like that. I just, you know, God, I love that. Could you? It's so wonderful. Thank you. That's not where we're going. It's about staying forgiving of the being who has harmed you in word, in deed, meaningly, intentionally, unintentionally. Because the being is not the action. Just as, I mean, has anyone in here ever said or done something that you wish you hadn't? Has anyone in here not ever done or said something that you wish you hadn't? Okay, so, right, so we all have. We all have. And the prayer that we would all have is that whomever we had said or done it to could see us as the fullness of our being and not that one action or word. That's when we feel remorse, when we feel guilt, that's the conflict inside is, how did I say that? How did I do that? That's where we feel guilty. Because we understand, well, that's not all of me. That was my fear, that was my jealousy, that was my anger, that was whatever it may have been. But that's not the sum total of me. And so in the same way, when people speak to us, treat us, do things to us or not to us or just in the world, that we would deem the good and the bad, how can we see those as actions or characteristics of a much fuller being and forgive the being? Because otherwise, see, here's what happens. Otherwise, we carry it with us. Loving someone, forgiving someone, it's not for them, really. I mean, the fact that it benefits them is a kind of a byproduct. It's really for us. Because otherwise, I carry through my life what you said or did. You said it or did it once. I carry it forever. You hurt me once. I hurt myself over and over and over again every time I think about it. Over and over and over again when I cannot eat and digest my food because I'm so upset about it. When I cannot fall asleep because I'm so upset by it. So we have to do that for us. Now again, loving and forgiving the entireness of a being does not mean that we always choose to put ourselves back in that situation. You know, you could be walking through a park and get bit by a dog. Okay, well, you're not going to hold it against the dog forever. You're not going to run after the dog and try to bite it back or kill it. But you're also not going to need therapy to get over the internal reaction to having been bit by a dog, because you understand it wasn't about me. I was in the wrong place at the wrong time. The dog couldn't help himself. He was triggered, or he had rabies, or, you know, whatever it may have been. Came between the mother and the pups. And yet, tomorrow when I walk through the park, I'm going to take a different route. So loving and forgiving does not mean that I disregard the impact of what they did. It means I don't hold on to my anger. I don't hold on to feeling like a victim. But I also fully understand my power to create my life. And that doesn't necessarily mean that just because I love and forgive the beingness of the dog who bit me, that I need to keep taking that path through the park every day. So that's an individual situation to have to look at and see, okay, you know, what is the bad? When the bad is general, you know, human nature stuff, people get upset, people sometimes yell, people, you know, sometimes don't treat us as respectfully as we'd like to be treated. It's human nature, it's relationships. I have yet to hear of any relationship in which that never happened. But that doesn't mean that you put yourself in a situation of being harmed. Physically harmed, emotionally harmed. So that's an individual basis, though. But even if you choose not to physically be in that situation anymore, you still have to find the love and the forgiveness. The two things are actually separate. I love and I forgive so I can stay in peace, so I can stay in being. Depending on the situation, depending on the bad, I may physically also stay, recognizing that it's an opportunity to learn, it's an opportunity to grow, it's an opportunity to overcome my own ego, my own anger, my own judgments, my own fears. Or, if I'm actually being harmed, out of love and respect for the temple that is me, I may choose not to be in that situation anymore. But in either case, I understand that the being who says or does these things is a much fuller being, a divine being, just as I am a fuller being, a divine being, than just the words or the actions. Join us here on the holy banks of Mother Ganga, in the lap of the towering and beautiful Himalayas, for our annual International Yoga Festival, taking place from March 1st to March 7th every year. Come join your global yoga family in a true union of yourself with your divine. We look forward to welcoming you all. You can go to the website on www.internationalyogafestival.org. Look forward to welcoming you all home to the banks of Mother Ganga. This brings to a close this hour of inspiration and transformation. Thank you so much for joining me. I'm so glad to be together with you all each week, and I look forward to being together again next Thursday, same time, on Om Times Radio.
Thank you.